It's been a long week, an anxious week. I heard Travis's and Lois Ann's words last week. I sat with them and resonated with them as I listened to the Zoom service from last week. And I know it's been a week full of ups and down, confusion and sadness, no matter what you wanted to happen. And it's all reminded me once again just how divided and fearful we are as a people, as a nation. I don't know how you've been tending to yourselves and your souls these last few weeks, but I've found a lot of joy in listening to Bruce Springsteen's new album, Letter to You. It's great. It's a mixture of his newer style along with some finally released songs that he wrote some 50 years ago. If you like The Boss, check it out. The lyrics aren't as edgy as some of my favorites, but still, I don't think of any other songwriter who's been able to speak so elegantly, poignantly, and rawly about our culture and our times. But while I've been listening to Letter to You quite a bit, it's another one of Bruce's songs that I've been drawn to again and again during this time of anxiety and uncertainty, fear and frustration. It's a lesser known song, yet it's one of my favorites. It's a song called Devils and Dust. In this song, Bruce imagines the plight of a soldier who has to enforce a checkpoint during the second Iraq war. And as you probably know, this was one of the most dangerous jobs for soldiers because checkpoints were frequent targets for suicide bombings. It's a job that trains you to see every civilian, every stranger as an enemy. For you never know what is going to happen next. In this song, Bruce forces us to think about the trauma, the anxiety that this fear creates. Fear, as Bruce goes on to show us, can be quite dangerous. It can annihilate us. It can destroy our souls and propel us to acts of violence. The song begins with these lyrics. I got my finger on the trigger, but I don't know who to trust. When I look into your eyes, there's just devils and dust. We're a long, long way from home, Bobby, and home's a long, long way from us. I feel a dirty wind blowing, devils and dust. Here in the opening verse, we sense the fear that torments this soldier, a fear that turns everyone into threats, potential enemies, where all he can see or she can see is devils and dust. And as we know all too well in our world, as we witnessed just over a week ago in the tragic shooting of Walter Wallace, the combination of fear and power is often deadly. But what I appreciate most about this song is how Bruce pushes us to see that this fear isn't just deadly for others. Most importantly, this fear, it destroys our souls too. Bruce finishes out the song this way. Well, I've got God on my side, and I'm just trying to survive. What if what you do to survive kills the thing you love? Fear's a dangerous thing. It will turn your heart black, you can trust. It'll take your God-filled soul and fill it with devils and dust. It'll take your God-filled soul and fill it with devils and dust. Here, Bruce reminds us of a truth that we often forget. Fear, if left unchecked, fear, if allowed to run rampant, is dangerous. It'll destroy one's soul. Can you imagine being a soldier guarding a checkpoint, always uncertain if someone approaching is a friend or a foe, always keeping your finger on the trigger, ready to shoot the next person that comes your way just in case. Who could you ever trust? Suspicion runs so deep through her veins that whenever she gazes into another's eyes, she must assume they are the enemy. This perpetual fear, it ruins one God-filled soul, leaving it dark, desolate, devils, and dust. Perpetual fear, this is nothing new to us. We live in a culture of fear. In fact, we are engulfed by it. Fear is the currency of politics, war, advertising, the media, and far too often, the church. If we witnessed anything this week, everyone is afraid. Afraid of the future. Afraid of what comes next. Afraid of what happens if the other side wins. Ours is a culture of high anxiety, uncertainty, and distrust. Who do we trust? What is real? Can we even bridge the divides that seem to be destroying us? And there is just so much for us to be afraid of. Some huge things like coronavirus, economic uncertainty, the environment, racial injustice, hurricanes, wildfires. And then there's those millions of other small fears that we reckon with every day. Family safety, identity theft, the dentist, insects. They're real, and we feel those too. Fear has become so prevalent in our society that in New York Times end of the decade review, the fear of the year was listed alongside the blockbuster movies of the year, fashion statements, popular foods, and colors. There's a reason that both John Paul II and Benedict XVI began their papacies with the very same words: do not be afraid. For today, there is no bigger obstacle than fear, which challenges our ability to follow Jesus and become God's people of peace. Our disordered and excessive fears have numerous moral consequences. Living in fear prevents us from acting charitably and hospitably to others. It makes us suspicious to everyone who is not like us. And most significantly, it has transformed safety to be our society's primary virtue. Just think about what we say to loved ones when they leave. We're far more likely to say, be safe, or be careful, rather than be loving, be patient, be good. Fear has caused us to primarily care about what we want to prevent and avoid, rather than the habits, the traits that we want to develop in our lives. Our fears, in other words, they contract our vision. Instead of looking outward, we focus our attention inward so that we can fend off the dangers that are all around us. So what's the answer? How do we faithfully respond to these rampant fears that our society produces? Real fears. How do we prevent all this fear and anxiety from taking our God-filled soul and turning it to devils and dust? Both of our Old Testament passages point us in the same direction. Trust. Trust in God's providence. Trust that God is actively involved in our world. That God is moving within our history, our lives, to bring about redemption. In Joshua, there's so much similarities to today. The people are anxious. God has just blessed these people, led them to the promised land, delivered, given them what they've wanted and hoped for. But now they are facing a time of transition. Joshua is at the end of his life. His days on earth are numbered. The people know it. Joshua knows it too. And so fear and anxiety overtake the camp. What's going to happen next? Where are we going? Who's going to lead us? And in this state of fear and anxiety, the people begin to make bad decision after bad decision. Decisions like worshiping other gods. Decisions like failing to remember who their God is and what their God has done. So here at the end of his life, Joshua reminds the people that no matter what tomorrow brings, no matter what challenges are ahead, things are going to go on. And the God that led the people out of Egypt, the God who has been with them these last 60 years in the desert and in the promised land, that God's going to be with them always. And no matter what happens, no matter who's in charge, this is the one they are called to serve, and this is the one whose love will sustain them. Similarly, in Isaiah 41, the Israelites are in exile. They're stuck in Babylon. The people have suffered a great deportation. They're stripped away from everything that has been familiar in their lives. It's an extremely chaotic and fearful time for the Israelites. The people are searching anywhere, everywhere, for a glimmer of safety and security, something to ease their anxieties so they can find a way to live in this foreign land. And in this great moment of fear, God says this: "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. Do not be afraid, you worm, Jacob, you maggot, Israel, for I myself will help you." Here again, we are taught that the only faithful response to fear is trust and faith and God. It's interesting because God doesn't tell the Israelites to be fearless, because fear isn't bad, right? Fear is important. It reminds us what is important to us, and it often impels us to act for change. Having no fear is not the proper response to our world's fearful ways. But what God reminds us is the only way we're able to live and combat these fears, the only way we're ever able to stop them from taking over us, is by maintaining our faith and trust in God. God insists that the path out of fear is not power, but trust, not strength, but vulnerability before God. And in order to get the Israelites to overcome their neurotic anxiety, in order to get them to step out into the open, into faith's daring, God reminds them that they are part of a much larger story, a story in which God has been actively involved since the beginnings of time. "But you, O Israel, my servant Jacob, whom I have chosen, you descendants of Abraham, my friend, I took you from the ends of the earth. From the farthest corners I have called you. I have said that you are my servant. I have chosen you, never rejected you." Through these words, God reminds the people, God reminds us that God has been actively guiding and loving us since time began. While it might appear at times that God abandons God's people, God insists that in exile, in darkness, no matter what we face, God is present just as before. Sure, these Israelites' fear has clouded their vision. It has caused the people to forget their history and miss seeing where their God is present. This is why God calls the people maggots and worms. It's not derogatory here. God is starkly reminding the people, reminding us that we are small and that we are unable to overcome the world of fear on our own. And the only way through this fear is by remembering that we are small and that we are part of something much, much larger. The story of God's people, of God's redemption and hope and light. For no matter how dark things may seem, no matter how uncertain things may be today, God is still driving this story to its proper conclusion, and that's the redemption of everything. It's okay to be afraid. It's okay to be anxious. But what we can't let happen is to allow these fears and anxieties to control us, to let them turn our God-filled soul into devils and dust. And that means that each and every one of us here must always remember that we are part of a much larger story of God's constant care for our world. For in the resurrection, God has already brought about the redemption of the world through Christ's faith. And today, somehow, God is still ushering in this same redemption into our world through our faithfulness. Only when we trust that the resurrection offers us God's paradigm for how God works in this world, when we trust that because God did not leave Jesus in the grave, God will not leave us in our times of suffering and darkness, will we be able to stand up to these anxieties and fears. Only when we believe that Jesus defeated sin and death, and now we are free to live in holy insecurity, free to even die for our neighbor. Only then will we be able to be like Jesus in this culture of fear. Only then will we be able to find ways to not let our fears control us. Only then will we be able to stop the devastation that fear creates. As a people of peace, we are called to build bridges in our excessively divided world. The only way we're going to be able to speak God's news to our neighbors is if we don't let fear dictate our lives, our community, our faith. The only way forward is if our faith remains focused on God's purpose. I'd like to close with a story, one which highlights how trust and peace are always connected. It's T.S. Eliot's play, Murder in the Cathedral, which is a story about the 12th century martyrdom of Thomas Becket, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who was killed by King Henry II. The play begins with Becket returning from exile in France. He had fled to France for safety out of the fear of the king's threats. But in exile, Becket realized that he needed to stand up to his fears and he needed to return to England because that was where he was called and that is where the church needed him. Thomas knew that this return, it was going to likely cost him his life. But he trusts in God and he lets his fate belong there, believing that if he dies, that somehow God is going to use it to serve God's causes. As the soldiers come to kill him, some of the priests try to bar the doors to the cathedral. But Thomas refuses to defend his life by force and commands this to those people. Unbar the doors. Throw open the doors. I will not have the house of prayer, the church of Christ, this sanctuary turned into a fortress. The church shall protect her own in her way, not as oak and stone, for stone and oak decay. Give no say, the church shall endure. The church shall be open even to her enemies. Open the door. The doors are open. Thomas is murdered. Courageously, Thomas refuses the way of security. He refuses to turn the churches into fortresses of protection. Thomas knows that it's more important for the church to maintain its mission as a sanctuary for the world, even its enemies, than to allow it to keep him safe. Just before his death, Thomas has a conversation with the women of Canterbury. Here, Thomas links his courage with his confidence in God's larger story and love for our world. Thomas tells them that he can embrace his fears and risk doing what is right because he has absolute faith in God, that God is working within our human history, and that God can weave even the darkest moments into the ultimate unfolding of God's good end. It's only this deep faith that allows Thomas to not succumb to the anxiety that has driven his priests to hide and lock themselves behind the doors. So as we close, listen to the words that Thomas speaks to the women who are already lamenting his death. Peace, and be at peace with your thoughts and visions. These things had to come to you and you accept them. This is one moment, but know that another shall pierce you with sudden painful joy when the figure of God's purpose is made complete. Amen.